How many times a day do you find yourself hoping for a do-over, a fresh start?
Imagine if your future, your security, your family, your livelihood depended on it.
The opportunity to not just do good work, but to get back to work. Dave's Killer Bread believes your past shouldn't be what holds you back.
Dave's Killer Bread believes in second chance employment. It's the purpose behind every loaf they make.
Learn more at daveskillerbread.com/second chances.
Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Yeah. All right, Megan, I have to share something with you that I'm not sure if you saw last weekend, over the weekend, I should say, Teresa's cameo.
Okay, so I think you saw a longer version than I did. The snippet I saw only include, you go ahead and explain it.
Okay, so basically, a bunch of friends got together, got a cameo from Teresa for one of their close friends. Now, it sets up with Teresa being like, hey, it's Teresa, you know, just wanted to say your friends got you this cameo and they wanted me to give you some advice because apparently the recipient of the cameo slept with her fiance's brother and got chlamydia and the whole family knows. So Teresa lays that all out in her very like Teresa dry, you know, delivery and goes ahead and gives her some advice. She's like, first of all, you need to go to the doctor. You need to get yourself good. And then you need to get the hell away from that family.
Okay. But that has to be a prank, right?
Listen, these days, you never know. It seems like it'd be very easy to put together a false story to then ask them to record, because when you book a cameo, you can put all sorts of things in there, like details about them, whatever, inside jokes or whatever.
The good news is chlamydia is very easy to treat, all right? You get yourself some special antibiotics, you get it cleared right up. So
right.
Either way, it's fine. I just have to believe that is a joke, because I remember that Jezebel roundup and it was like all of these celebrity cameos where they clearly weren't reading what they were saying and it would be like this really crazy anti-government sort of things, or like,
oh my god, no.
Yes. Cameo's funny. It's a funny, funny thing. Have you gotten a cameo?
I have never gotten one, no. I've thought about getting some for friends, and like people that I've looked up were either no longer on it or they hadn't signed up yet. I think I looked up Brandy, not Glanville, but the singer, Brandy Norwood, and she wasn't on it anymore. Her like submissions were turned off. But I have thought about it to get as a present for people. And I don't even know if I were to receive one who I would want it from the most. Like that'd be a tough call.
I think Caitlyn Jenner is the most expensive.
Oh, really?
I know, still.
Now tell me about the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills reunion, because typically, as the show producer, you go in person, obviously very different pandemic-wise, but what can you tell us?
I honestly don't know anything.
What?
I know. This is like a very hard year for a lot of reasons. And I will say that not being able to go to the reunion is one of them, because this is a reunion I needed for my own self to go to.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously we will know in time what unfolds, but there has been a lot of rumors flying around about what went down at this reunion. So, I mean, this week's episode alone is launching us right into this big Brandy Denise situation. So I can only imagine.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I'm going to be keeping my eye looking out for cuts of that reunion every single day.
So today we're going to recap this week's Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Real Housewives of New York City, plus finally Shaw's reunion part one. We have to discuss everything that went down there. And you got to interview one of your faves, Dorit Kemsley from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
A dream.
And we'll always wrap up with Rose and Thorn.
All right, can we please get into Beverly Hills?
Oh my God, yes. Where do we begin?
We'll save the Denise Brandy stuff for the end of this convo, because I feel like another sort of a real gem that was thrown to us old school Beverly Hills fans was, you know, Adrienne Maloof. Obviously, we already knew that she was at this party of Kyle's, but the fact that Brandy was, you know, in rare form and she was saying to Adrienne, cheers to surrogacy and to lying about having kids. Because as we all know, season 3 was just this insane season where something had been said by Brandy, some accusation, and they bleeped it out. Now, since then, I think Adrian has maybe once said, like, confirmed, yes, it was about the surrogacy thing, but we've never had an actual conversation between the two about it, you know? Right. Like, not in such a spelled out way.
Here's a surrogacy! Surrogacy and pretending about babies and then ultimately just loving each other.
Yes, and you know, I think Brandy had some liquid courage, which good on her, because she was able to apologize, which I think Adrian had maybe not been expecting after all this time, but I feel like she was probably grateful to receive it. You know what I noticed in this episode too, which actually was pointed out by a couple people online in the last few weeks? This was Teddy's first like interview confessional in two episodes.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
You know, the last couple episodes haven't been too huge for Teddy as a player in the situation, but I guess with the conversation with Camille and some of the other things, obviously, that unfold at the end of the episode, we need to hear from Teddy in her interviews.
Yeah. I just think it's good that Teddy's like, I'm not even going to pretend that we're going to be okay, Camille. We're not friends. But the other thing that I just couldn't help but notice this episode, or at Kyle's party, really, is just the amount that Brandy was drinking. And it wasn't like when you accidentally have a few too many like glasses of wine, which I'm laughing saying that, but it does happen. You forget how many you've had, and it's just, you know, it's flowing. But she was like knocking back glasses, you know, in one shot. And I just felt like it's the kind of drinking you do when you either need to forget something or don't want to deal with something.
Yeah. And I guess what we learned is that she didn't want to deal with Denise at this party. And she was obviously coping with what happened in their friendship, which we learn at the end of the episode. But yeah, I mean, it was a charity event. There's a time and a place. And like you said, we have all been in a situation where maybe we drank too much. And, you know, I mean, how many work holiday parties, Megan? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Don't say Megan like that. Look, it's all of us.
No, I know. I mean, I'm not saying you. I'm just saying like, all of us. But yeah, there was definitely some layers to what was going on there. And it definitely wasn't the time or place where you should maybe be stumbling around on the stage when people are, you know, spending $25,000 on an auction item. Kris Jenner, shout out to you. But yeah, there was definitely a lot going on. And we learned that by the end of the episode. I love your note here. Is anyone else turned on hearing Dorit speak Italian? Well, obviously you are.
Quando siamo a Roma, voi siete sicuramente contenta che parlo italiano. Giusto o no?
I can't help it. Like, she, first of all, of course, can do no wrong for me. But also, she speaks Italian so well. I mean, I don't know what she's saying, but it sounds so good.
Well, and it just goes to show that maybe she can speak in whatever accent she wants, okay? Because you do have to dip into dialects and accents and things, which was actually a big thing on Below Deck Med this week too, with Jess and Bugsy not being able to kind of understand each other, or at least Jess being able to understand Bugsy. But it kind of makes sense when you know that Dorit, I mean, how many languages does she speak? Like 4 or 7 or something crazy. So
something crazy. Yeah. You know what I was thinking? Do you think she and Countess Luann would get along? I feel like they both sort of have that in common, where they've traveled a lot. They speak many languages. Luann speaks Italian.
I think you're right. That is a good housewife to housewife combo.
Right?
That's true. I think when you connect on something like language too, you always feel like you can get along with someone in a different way because they understand things that you do and that other people might not. Oh, that's good.
Okay. I love that Garcelle asked Sutton how she got her money.
Did you inherit money? Did you marry money? Were you born with money? Like, I'm curious.
I got married and my ex-husband, he did well. So.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, and she set it up appropriately. She was like, normally I wouldn't do this. I don't think it's, you know, the right thing to talk about money, blah, blah, blah. I'm from the South too. Like, and she went right for it though, but she didn't really get an answer, did she?
I mean, look, she was not born into it. It's not her inheritance. She didn't grow up with it. She married her husband and at like, you know, they met when they were in high school and he did very well. So yeah, we don't know how he made his money, but that's how she's rich. It's through him.
She does carry herself like someone...
like old money.
Yeah, who comes from old money. So it is a bit surprising to hear that it was new, because even just in the way that she dresses, the couture fashion that she's into, and I think it's because she's Southern too, and there's sort of this idea of like, you know, old Southern money is a big one, but I was a little surprised that there wasn't more to it. And I am curious about what her ex-husband, you know, where he made all his money, because I would like to take some notes and just figure out how I can live like Sutton.
Okay, I think we might be a little late for you for this big life career change, but maybe you could marry someone in that field, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, just for the money, though.
Yeah, you know? No, like, keep Danny for Smith. Love and just take on someone else for money. All right. So can we just get into it now?
Well, first, before we go right into Denise and Brandy, because we're going to get caught up in this, I have to point out Amelia and the whole list of demands that she has for this apartment. Like, it's
that could almost be my thorn. I think that was just too much.
It's too much. And you know, I understand people who have anxiety and you're fearful of certain things, whatever, but she was getting down to like the real nitty gritty of like, well, if it's on the first floor, there can't be a gate that they have to go over. Like, she's really thinking that, you know, she's going to get murdered in her apartment in Beverly Hills if she lives on the first floor.
I have a different perspective because I have anxiety, and I just feel like you are anxious and can afford to have these great things. But like, you know, a lot of people have to get by without those things, without living in a $5,000 a month right. apartment, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I do appreciate that Rinna recognizes that she has, quote, created monsters in a lot of ways, and that she is offering to help Amelia with some of the rent. And I hope she sticks to that. I hope she only gives $1,000, which is still a significant amount of money to be supporting your child every single month towards their rent. But I hope that she does maintain that limit and helps Amelia understand how to budget and also manage that anxiety. Because if you do want to be off living on your own and paving your own way, you're going to have to learn how to manage that and then, you know, manage your finances afterwards. I wonder what Alexia was thinking the whole time. She's probably used to people giving her a list of demands like that, working in real estate. I don't know. I'm very curious to know what was going through her head.
Where do we begin?
I mean, what, like, first of all, I will say that, you know, we've known that this was coming all season, but I didn't know who was going to be in the room for that initial conversation. And it was kind of an unlikely group of people to be in a room together to have the conversation. So that was my first, you know, observation that I found kind of interesting.
Okay, so it's like this thing where we all know the accusations. Like, I mean, we think we know. The accusation is going to be that Brandy and Denise slept together. But I really felt like it was so much more layered than that. And it made a lot more sense to me why it's become this huge thing. It's not just Brandy saying, oh, Denise and I hooked up. Mm-hmm. And she and I hooked up, and then she made me feel like a bad person because everyone knows my brand is anti-cheater. And so now she has this over me where I'm not supposed to tell anyone. Now, of course, this is all accusations. You know, we can't say with certainty whether it did happen or didn't happen.
Yeah, there were many details to Brandy's story that, like you said, going into it, we did know there was going to be an accusation of them sleeping together or whatever it was. But when you really heard all of the details of the story that Brandy was giving, it felt very real and very much like, oh, this is a bit different than we thought it was. And there are a lot of layers to it. And Brandy is really upset by it. I mean, Kim was sort of leading her to like reveal it all, you know, but like Brandy, I think, did need to talk about it with people who know her and know Denise. And she's known these women for longer than she's known Denise and longer than Denise has known these women. So I'm glad she felt comfortable opening up. But like, I wonder, what is the end goal? Is it just to expose the side of Denise that she says she's seen?
Yeah. See, as much as I love Brandy and as much as a fan as I love the drama, I think that there is, I just think it's a terrible thing to say, to accuse someone of sleeping with you. It's both of your stories, sure. But it's like, if it weren't true, there's no way for Denise to prove that. And it's like, I always think that because I remember I used to be a big Jersey Shore fan. And at a reunion, the situation accused Snooki of like hooking up with him after she had already started a relationship with her now husband.
That's right. Yes, that was awful.
And I remember thinking this is so terrible because if it's true, he's outing her. If it's not true, you have no way of putting the toothpaste back in the tube. Like it's out there now. And
yeah.
Everyone's going to believe it whether or not it's true.
That's really a great visual, like imagery, like trying to put toothpaste back in a tube. Like I'm picturing it in my head and it's impossible.
It's impossible. It's going back in.
You have to cut the end of it open then and like stick it in that way. I mean, geez, there's a way to do it, but like, no, it's so true. And you know, it's tough too because I feel like I've been behind Denise in a lot of the situations that have happened this season and even last season. And there's a lot that I like about her. And there are just qualities that she's shown that we've seen on the show that I respect and admire. And I need to hear her side of it. And I hope that we get to hear it at some point when it all comes to a head and we get, you know, the big reveal. Obviously, in next week's episode, Teddy is the one who's like, listen, this is what she said. And in the footage that we saw, Denise seemed pretty upset. So I just want to know her perspective and know what she has to say about it, because Brandy did mention that they do have, Denise and Aaron, an open marriage so long as Aaron knows and that it's with a woman. So why would Denise then tell Brandy the next day? Why all of a sudden then can Aaron not know? Like, why is she trying to hide it then? Like, what, there must be more to it. And I need Denise to explain that.
Right. So I agree. And my thinking was that what Brandy was trying to say is that Denise had said they had an open marriage, but that wasn't actually true.
Right. Okay. So that it was actually a lie.
But also, does Denise Richards need to be tricking people into sleeping with
That's
her?
That's a good point. No.
Like, I'm pretty sure a lot of people would volunteer, you know?
Yeah. She made the call at that moment to like not tell Aaron for whatever reason. But that also, if it's true, put Brandy in a really shitty position. So I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot to address right now, you know?
It's going to be really interesting to see this conversation in Rome next week, because either we're going to get an explanation from Denise, or what we were shown very early on the first episode this season, like, Denise may not be in the next few episodes, because this might be the, you know, straw that breaks the camel's back, whatever you want to call it. This might be what Denise is just like, I'm not dealing with this anymore. I will say too, it's not my rose, but I wanted to point it out. There is nothing like putting a wig on a dog.
Do you do it a lot?
I don't, but it's like one of the funniest things you can ever see. And just the way Erica cracked up so hard, you could tell that like the crew was in on it, like the camera guy, you know, like it was just one of those cute moments.
Well, the dog looked right into the camera. Like as soon as it was on in place, the dog like looked right at the camera.
It was perfect. It was so perfect. I love Tiago. He's my favorite.
Such a good dog.
A good dog.
And I spoke to Dorit Kemsley about all things Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, about the Denise and Brandy rumors, and her favorite topic, clothes. So, Dorit, thank you so much for taking the time to do this remote interview. We so appreciate it.
Oh, I'm happy to do it, and I'm happy to be talking to you guys. It's my pleasure.
How is it going, social distancing? Like, how was life at home with PK and the kids?
We got into a routine really early on, so I feel like that helped a lot. The kids were still in school, and, you know, I was doing up to 5 Zoom classes a day with Jagger. And I think once school ended and summer began, that was like a little less pressure. But I have to say, you know, I've been very grateful for the time that we've all been able to spend together. It's been a real bonding moment, you know, for the family and the kids are so happy that we're home 24/7 and working out of home. So it's not been all bad. I think on some level, PK and I are kind of, we've enjoyed it.
That's nice. I do feel like this is the most time many married couples have spent together. Are you and PK learning anything new about each other?
No, we don't learn anything new. I mean, PK and I are the kind of couple that we're used to spending 24/7 with one another. You know, we kind of prefer that. We're that kind of couple, and we're better when we're together. I think when he's traveling or we're not together, I think that's when it's harder. But when we're together, it's like it feels like your whole being is there.
That's nice. And I mean, just hearing you now, you were asking to borrow his laptop and you guys were so sweet with each other. I feel like most spouses, it's like, don't bother me during the work day.
Oh my God, no, not my husband. No. And not me with him, not him with me. You know, I think when you like your spouse, you're nice to one another. It doesn't mean that we don't have arguments. I would say, funny enough, we spent 4 months, you know, just us in the house 24/7. And I don't think we've argued once. And I really hope that this is, you know, me mentioning this and saying it's not going to like, we're going to have an argument tonight. But I feel like when we're together a lot, it's just like we're in our happy place. And we're nice to one another because we like each other.
Yeah, that's important. They don't tell you that often enough. Find a spouse who you like.
Totally, exactly. Find the one that you like and you won't. You know, it'll be easier.
Right. I want to talk always about what you wore this season on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, because every single occasion you bring it, you show up. And I want to know, as a designer, do you look at the clothes as a whole? Like what your collection almost is going to be for this season on the show?
No, goodness no. I wake up in the morning and I see how I feel. And I like to put things together. It's fun for me. It's a creative space that I find is easy and it's fun. It's like a nice outlet for me. So I'm not even really one of those that can choose an outfit the night before. On occasion, if I know I'm going to have a very, very busy morning, just for a little bit of peace, I'll try and I know what I'm doing the next day. When I put the kids to bed, I go into my closet and that's my fun time. And I kind of put together looks. I enjoy dressing up. I always have. I've always loved fashion. Spent a lot of time in Italy. And the culture there is, you know, the women, they'll get dressed to go to the grocery store. You know, it's what I was surrounded with and surrounded by. I come from a long line of women who take pride in the way they look. My grandmother would never leave the house without being dressed to the nines and having her cute purse and her hair and her makeup. And, you know, my mother was the same way. And so it's very natural for me and I enjoy doing it. And then, of course, if you have an occasion to do it and you get to really doll up, it's even more fun. You know, I like to play with my hair. So sometimes I'll think about, you know, it more often than not, I choose my outfit and then I decide what kind of hair I want to go with the outfit because I like to change things up. Sometimes I'll see a hairstyle that I'm really drawn to and then I'll create an outfit around it. But it's just fun for me. I enjoy it.
Well, with that said, we know that you guys shot the reunion. So what was your look going into that? What can you tell us?
Well, I don't think anyone wants me to give too much away. So I think that I need to wait. But I can say that, you know, it was virtual. So I think that you want to get dressed up, but you still want to look like you're home, like you're hosting a really elegant dinner party. You know, it's the reunion. And I think that, you know, particularly Beverly Hills, you know, people are expecting us to, at the very least, look dolled up. And I think every lady there looked stunning. I mean, they all brought it. For me, it was, you know, last year I did all those clips in my hair. And I know a lot of people were waiting, you know, to see what I was going to do with my hair this year because, you know, I kind of went for it last year and it was controversial to say the least. And I think that, you know, I wanted to find a way to really also bring something unusual and fun and creative and artistic, but different from last year. And I think I achieved that, I would say.
That's a good tease. I'm ready to see it now.
Yes.
You know, without giving anything away, I just am curious. You've done both now. You've done the virtual reunion and you've done the in-person reunion. Which do you prefer?
I think it's always better when you're all together in a room. I think the energy is different, and that's what the reunion's about. I think there are some limitations with a virtual reunion, but I will say I'm super proud of production. Kudos to them because they really brought it. They had a system that was as good as it possibly could be. It was a big 60-inch screen. We were able to see, all the ladies were able to see one another. And Andy and, you know, the audio, there was no glitches. It's a long day. It's hard. You know, it's hard enough to sit there on the couch with the other women. I mean, when you're essentially home alone in your chair, you know, and you're looking at a screen, it's almost a little bit more challenging. But I can tell you this, the reunion is definitely worth tuning into. It was a very, very good reunion.
I feel like you guys often need a recovery day afterwards. Did you need one this year?
I think we need a recovery 2 to 3 days. I think that one day is not enough. You know, there's a lot of buildup to the reunion and you have to mentally prepare yourself. You have to get into a headspace where you have to think about, you know, what you filmed and what the season has shown and all of the things that you feel are unfinished or that you want to get out. And so the preparation in and of itself takes a lot out of you. And then, of course, the day is very long and tiring. And I think when you're done, you know, the next day you're coming off of that high, you feel like you've been run over by a truck. But I think it took a good 2 days for me to really feel like I was surfacing, you know, I felt like I was buried. Yeah.
Yeah.
Emotionally draining. Very draining.
You know, Sutton and Garcelle, they just wrapped their first season and then now just had their first reunion. Overall, how would you say that they did?
Listen, it's really difficult because it's something you've never done. And until you've done your first reunion, you don't know what to expect. There's no playbook. You know, all the housewives, anyone that's ever done it would tell you that. I think that they did the best that they could. I think that it's finding your feet and understanding it. And you are in a group of women, most of which have done, you know, have been part of this group for a number of years. So I think they're great additions. I took to Garcelle very quickly. I think she's got a great personality. She's funny. She's engaging. She loves to have fun. She's warm. We have a good laugh together. And it was very quick. Sutton, on the other hand, you know, it took me a minute. I think that, you know, I couldn't quite figure her out. She's quirky. She doesn't really have a filter. And I suppose I can relate because I've certainly had that, you know, those moments, particularly on the show. And I don't think before I speak. And she's definitely one of those. And then I got a chance to really get to know her. And she's lovely. I think she brings a lot to the show and to the group. I think she's a welcomed addition. I think she's funny and she's sweet and she's kind and she's fabulous. And she really brings something interesting. So I think they're great additions.
We certainly saw Aaron make a splash this season, you know, with his involvement in the drama. And what I liked about watching you this season is it was almost like this maternal side of you came out toward Denise. And I wondered if it was because you had dealt with your own drama with PK your first season on the show, and if you were sort of, if that was the driving force behind you kind of coming to her aid or giving her advice.
I think it's multifaceted. I think that I struggled my first year. And so I feel very empathetic for those that go through it first year. It's a lot. And if you're having a hard time first, second year, any year, you know, I feel like I can really empathize. That's part of it. Yes. You know, my husband had made some mistakes. He came to bat for me. And even though his intention was good, you know, he learned watching it back that it's not nice to get involved and speak a certain way to women or a group of women. And he's not that way inclined, you know, and it really backfired on him. And I felt very, very bad because he was painted in a certain light, so different to who he actually is. So, of course, there's that experience. And then, you know, I have a real friendship with Denise. I care about her a lot. Last year, I really got to know her and I was going through a rough time. And she was there for me and she was very supportive and checking in with me. And I was so grateful for it. And I don't forget those things. And so when the tables had turned and she was in that situation, I really felt like I wanted to be that same support for her, you know, and lend myself the same way she did and know that she's, you know, that she has my support. And, you know, I want to try and help her through it.
Yeah. This season was interesting because I feel like we broke the fourth wall a lot, like more so than maybe even in the past. What's it been like for you to go through the show's evolution since your first season?
Well, this was the first year we did break the fourth wall, and that was wild, you know, especially for something that you're just never allowed to do. And to be able to do that, it's almost like it took some getting used to. But I think that it's a true testament to, you know, you don't have any control over what goes in or out. And you can't assume that control. And I think that at the point that people can try or think they can, it's going to become a completely different show. You know, we're there as a group, be ourselves and to show our lives, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of the above, you know, and that's what you sign up for. And we're all there to do it. You know, obviously this was the first time that I've experienced the breaking of the fourth wall, and it was unusual, but I think that it was probably the right thing to do at the end of the day. Mm.
Does it make you nervous at all, just knowing the show at any moment can sort of shift?
The show makes me nervous, period. So I don't think that one little thing like that is makes me more nervous. The whole thing makes me nervous. But it's not that the show makes you nervous. What it is that you are so accountable for every single thing that comes out of your mouth. And if you're someone like me that, you know, your heart's in a good place, but do you think about everything? You know, I'm not a calculated person. My brain doesn't work a certain way. So I'm bound to say things that, you know, I'm going to get in trouble for, you know, and I, you want to feel comfortable. You want to be able to be yourself. So I think that if you're someone like that, and I think that as long as you are open to being open and having an opinion, even if it's not the popular opinion, but if you have your own opinion, what you need to do as a housewife is just feel comfortable enough to share it, because that's the beauty about, and you know, I hate to say the show because it is real life, but is that you have 8 very strong, independent, successful women that have opinions. And what's interesting is that we can have a difference of opinion and still have a friendship and get into a discussion about it. Sometimes something small becomes bigger and bigger because it's not dealt with properly. And then you have to find your way through it. And that's the dynamic of this group and the show.
You know, my last question would be that now that the reunion has wrapped, you ladies get a bit of a break from each other and just from the show and the drama that comes with it. And I think that in this time of self-quarantine, relationships in general are just taking more effort. Who do you think you're going to put forth the effort to remain close with during this time?
I have actually communicated with all of the ladies since quarantine, throughout quarantine, some more than others. And I think that that will continue. You know, I have a nice relationship. Like I said, you know, you are closer to some, but I will say that as far as this group goes, I, for the most part, have a nice relationship with just about everybody, and I stay in touch. So that's where I am anyway.
Thank you again so much. I do appreciate your time and for doing this, even with all the technical difficulties.
No, I appreciate your patience, really, and thank you.
Okay, Roni.
Can I just tell you that I had watched, you know, last week's episode, of course, and then I saw that I had access to this episode. I like got out of bed at like 1 a.m. I couldn't sleep because I wanted to see what happened at Ramona's party.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, you got a quality moment.
I know. Ramona
and, you know, production-wise. Well, this was a very Ramona-centric episode also, obviously leading up to her big party with 50 of her best, closest friends in the whole world. Mm-hmm. I will say that, you know, say what you want about Ramona, I do find her charming when she gets so bashful talking to Mario. Like, those are my favorite interactions that I ever see her having.
And I actually love you.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Wait, you're supposed to say I love you too.
I love you too. And you.
I agree.
And he is so handsome. And I do love that they're just out to dinner and they're kind of reminiscing. And Avery's there. And, you know, she was asking him if he was seeing anybody. And she still gets a little bit like, there's probably a part of her that hopes that he's not, in a weird way, because she's still single. And, you know, I don't know. It just like, the way she smirks and sort of the look in her eyes, it just, I feel like you see a little bit more of who Ramona could be more often.
It is very interesting to me that she has said Mario has asked to get back together and she said no. Because I agree, when they're together, I just still see this spark from her. And so I just feel like it probably took a lot of strength for her to say no, you know? Mm-hmm. I feel bad because I've, you know, I told you I've restarted watching from the beginning. And I do feel like they brought out
good things in each other. He had to go and fuck it all up by cheating.
But you know what? If they still have this healthy relationship, they can continue to hopefully do that, even if they're not together as man and woman, I think Ramona said in her interview. they're still a family, you know? And actually, when I was home this past weekend talking to my dad, like, you know, my parents have been divorced since I was 5. So, but we still do consider ourselves a family in a lot of ways. You know, we're always going to be that. It just might not be in the traditional sense. And we see that with Leah and the way she co-parents with Rob, you know, with Kiki and everything. So, you know, families come in all different shapes and sizes.
Very true.
Very, very true. What did you think about Luann and the whole volunteering at the Fortune Society?
Oh, I thought that was great. We've always, you know, we've seen a lot of good charitable acts from Luann over the years.
I respect her for it. I mean, I think it's really important. It's an important issue to bring attention to, even just to have, you know, the cameras in the room for that and to hear some of those stories, I think is very, very important. And, you know, for her to try to put it into perspective of like, this is what I went through. So I can't imagine how you guys must feel because, you know, in the grand scheme of things, what Luann went through was such a small, tame version of what so many other people go through and so many other people in that room did. So I did appreciate that. And, you know, she got very emotional. I also want to point out that the whole situation with Sonia getting kicked out of a gay bar for singing musicals. Listen, I have been with straight female friends and that has happened to them in my presence. So it doesn't mean that Sonia's like a mess. I mean, I'm sure she was quite drunk. We know that Sonia gets quite drunk, but
it also, like, she is a gay man. Like, she got kicked out of a gay bar for going up on stage and singing show tunes.
I mean, listen, it happened in DC with one of my close friends, Alyssa. I remember we had been kind of day drinking and we ended up at this bar where they were playing a bunch of, you know, different musical numbers on the screens, and she was, you know, had sort of taken over part of the bar and like strutting back and forth, and they didn't really kick us out, you know, but they were sort of like, listen, straight female, please be respectful of this establishment, you know, because there are like a lot of people who go to gay bars. It is a safe haven. It's a sanctuary for the LGBTQA+ community, whatever, you know, and when straight women come in with their like bachelorette parties or whatever, it can be a little bit like, okay, this isn't your place, you know?
Okay. And look, I 1000% get that point, but you tell me, where do us straight gals go when we don't want to be hit on by gross straight guys?
That's true.
You tell me.
I mean, my first thought was Nashville because there's plenty of other.
You're like, just go to Nashville.
Just go to Nashville because that has become a huge bachelorette, you know, destination, I think, over the last decade or so. So chances are there'll just be a bunch of other straight women around the bar.
Okay. Okay.
There'll be just like those creepy men waiting for you guys, like knowing. But yeah, I don't know. Okay. Try Nashville, I guess. Okay, well, let's get to Ramona's birthday because that was crazy.
A train wreck.
Yeah.
First of all, the balls on all of these housewives to just not look at the dress code. I did think that was rude. Like, look, I think it's a little stupid that you're like, everyone wearing black so I can stand out in red. I think that's stupid. However, it's terrible to not follow the birthday girl's, you know, wishes.
Well, and I would just be very self-conscious of not being dressed in the theme, because how many times have you been to an event where you're like, oh my God, I underdressed? Like, you look around and you see people who are in, you know, heels and a dress, or if you're a guy, they're in like, you know, slacks. I can't believe I said slacks. I'm getting so old.
I know. Who are you?
Or like coats or something. Like, I've been in plenty of situations where I feel like I stand out because I might be underdressed. You can never be overdressed, you know, but you can be under. So if I had gone to a party where the theme was wear black and then I was wearing what Sonia was wearing, like, yeah, I would feel a little bit like, oh, I kind of messed this up. But I think it's a little bit maybe to spite Ramona because she just does this every single year.
That's true.
And it's just sort of like, it's not always going to be about you, because also my birthday and Dorinda's birthday is like yesterday and tomorrow. So take that.
Right. Ugh, they just seem so over her.
Right. Well, even just the way she does behave in certain social situations, like how Leah was hovering around waiting for Ramona to acknowledge her so she could say hi. It's just a weird way to behave when you invited 50 people. You were very open about what you thought thought Leah should wear and all of these other things. And then you're just going to like awkwardly leave her hanging while you finish up a conversation with this one person. It's just like that characteristic of Ramona where she will not address you until she's ready is not cool, you know?
Yeah, agreed. Also, Carol Alt was at her party, who's like this famous model from a time ago. Like, I just was like, how is she one of Ramona's 50 closest girlfriends?
Well, you know, does she actually have 50 closest girlfriends, or are these people that she socializes with? And that is the thing, you know?
Right.
I did like Leah's prediction early on in the episode. It probably looks like a MAGA rally. You know, she was talking about it's going to be all white women, Upper East Side, like faces pulled, you know, real tight. And a lot of the women we saw at the party did have a facelift recently, or, you know, at some point.
They're probably all Upper East Side, lots of facelifts, and it probably looks like a MAGA rally.
But that's what we expect. I mean, we know what Ramona's friends are going to look like. So the whole throwdown with production, the whole situation.
Oh my God, that was so good.
You know, did it just escalate super quickly? Like, I just, like, all of a sudden it was just like Ramona was like freaking out, and I was like, whoa. I was like, this happened fast.
So I remember a last season's reunion when they brought up the fact that Ramona kept Sonia from being invited to her birthday. That, like, you know, the friend was like, oh, and I'll invite Sonia. And Ramona on camera is like, don't, please don't. And Ramona said, look, I didn't want cameras there. So if it's just my birthday with people that aren't on the show, production's not going to care. But when I have Sonia at my birthday and then I have to have Dorinda and Luann, then cameras are going to want to be there. And I didn't want that. So I feel like Ramona already sort of went in with this attitude of like, I don't really want this to be about the show or the other women. I just want this to be about me. And then to have Leah dry-humping Luann with Dorinda, you know, grinding on Leah, it just, I guess. But it's also like, isn't that the mark of a good party?
I think not in Ramona's eyes, you know, which
I
do get that she was probably trying to keep a certain air of how it was supposed to be in the room, a certain kind of energy, a certain level of class. I don't want to say class, but, you know, we know what
propriety.
Yeah, we know what Ramona expected of her party. And did it get a little unruly for the setting it was in? Probably. And then there was also a little bit of property damage, you know, with like Sonia stomping on that glass thing. Like,
oh my God, that was great. So I think that was a callback to like the, where, what trip were they on? But remember Sonia, the one where she hit her head, Miami.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And she had been stomping on glass. So I think she was trying to reprise that role, but like, I don't think this is okay. Like, that was really not okay.
No. And there's also a certain time at any party where maybe that behavior is a little more acceptable. Perhaps at the point of the party in which they were in was a little too early for that, you know?
Right.
Does that require Ramona to freak out and demand to talk to producers and threaten to quit the show? Like, probably not. It was a bit of an overreaction on Ramona's part, but it was also a little bit, I don't want to say disrespectful of the ladies to be like that, but they did take it maybe a little bit too far.
No! Quit the show right now. Yeah, I'm done.
Like, I fully feel like they went into this party like, we're mad at Ramona, let's ruin her her birthday. Even if they weren't knowingly, I think subconsciously.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, even with the outfit choices, you know, rebelling against the theme.
Right.
I also am just very grateful that I am not a producer on the show, because
can you imagine?
Like, I spoke to Selena Rochester last week. You guys would remember from the interview with a Bravo exec, and you know, we had a lot of conversations about different things and having to deal with talent when you have someone that upset and you need to continue filming, like get something done, but you need to calm them down, and it's like in this moment of crisis, you know, like it's a lot of pressure and it's a lot of stress, and I'm just so glad to have not been on the receiving end of Ramona's rage in that moment.
No kidding.
Also, we're going back to Mexico. That's good.
Oh, yeah. And Leah's never been.
I know. And I was actually finding a lot of comfort in that because I had just gone to Mexico for the first time at the beginning of this year for my friend's wedding. And I had never been before. And people would be like, oh, my God, you've never been to Mexico? And I'm like, no. So I don't feel so weird knowing that Leah is a bit older and probably a little more well-traveled, but also hasn't been.
Yeah, I was shocked that you hadn't been either.
Well, let's just wait until Leah unleashes in Mexico. That is going to be good.
I know. I can't wait.
Okay, Shaz.
Shaz.
So it's been a little bit of time since the season wrapped up, but it seems like friendships are not doing well in this group still.
First of all, do you find that you need a lot of reassurance right now from your friends? Like, because you can't really see people and you're just like, are we still friends? Or is it just me? Well, I'm a deeply insecure person.
I mean, it is tricky. It is interesting because, you know, you and I, we work in this office with a lot of people. We are friends with a lot of the people that we work with. And, you know, you and I get to talk all the time, which is great. But there are people that I don't get to talk to in our office all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes I do think like, oh my God, are we going to be okay? Like, whoa, is it okay if I talk to them again? You know, I do get that mentality. And that is something about this pandemic and the lockdowns that everyone has had to go through that I think has added to the stress of it all is those social interactions that we're so used to having all the time with people are totally removed. So I think a lot of people probably feel exactly the same way. And we seem to see it in this group. I'm really glad that Paulina showed up because I love her and I love Mike and their relationship and everything that's happening between the two of them. I'm so glad we got a bit of her in this reunion.
Just the fact that, you know, there has been so much separation and you don't know where relationships stand. And I just feel like with this reunion in general, it's like, even the season itself was shot a long time ago. Then we had to wait so long for this reunion. And I just wonder, like, if everyone's sort of been in a standstill this whole time. Or how, because, you know, like, for MJ and Reza, for example, are they just not talking? That's just such a long time to go without interacting.
I know, it's true. I mean, we know that Gigi is very caught up having a new baby and MJ has her son. So there's a lot of things to keep people busy, but it is strange to hear that they haven't spoken. Some of them haven't talked to each other in a while, that Gigi and blocked Nima on Instagram and everything. It just, it's like, wow, I think this pandemic has probably made it a lot harder for any of them to remain friends or try to repair their friendships at this point.
It seems like a lot of them are mad at Nima, but like I could not for the life of me understand what the issue was.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really understand Gigi's explanation of him commenting on her Instagram and saying things that, you know, he thought was about him, but it wasn't. But I don't know.
But it was about him because, like, what?
Well, and then there's these other posts like making fun of his teeth and stuff. Like, I'm just like, what is happening with Nima? Like, what did he do to everybody? I don't get it.
Gigi, why'd you block Nima?
I actually would love to know that question too.
I think that things that I was posting that weren't necessarily sometimes about him. I mean, Doug definitely posted things about him.
Yeah, you definitely slandered my
name.
But
there was a lot of times that I wasn't posting anything and it just automatically made it about him. And that's what got me to the point where I was just like, you know, I don't have time for this to have to argue everything I post. So if I'm going to talk about you, it's going to be very clear on my social media that I'm talking about you.
Yeah, that's literally online bullying and someone who just hates you for no reason.
Exactly. I don't know if we're going to find out in part two, but I hope. I mean, I will say next week we're going to be co-hosting with MJ on this podcast.
That's right. You heard it here first.
So I'm going to ask her for sure.
Yeah, we have some questions for you, MJ.
Well, it is funny because I feel like Gigi pulled a real Vicky Gunvalson who was like, this is my show. Get off my show. But Andy was like, I know you're super high, Gigi, but Nima is part of the show.
Oh, boy, bye. This ain't your show.
I can't hear what you're saying. Gigi, take your sunglasses off.
I know you're super high, but I have bad news for you. He's on the show.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Andy.
That was also a little shady of Andy because we know that he is a supporter of cannabis and all of it. So just to like really call Gigi out like that is a little bit like, okay, all right.
And also, I thought it was like a fun fact that she is smoking weed again because she wasn't able to breastfeed from the beginning.
Right.
So that's not an issue. And I'm just like, but like the same amount or less, you know?
I feel like, yeah, I think it would really stress me out if I were responsible for a very small infant child, but stoned during it. Like that, I don't think that I could handle that.
I think it would send me into like an existential crisis every time. Like I'd be yes. like, what is my life? Who is this person to me? What, you know, and it would just be like, oh God, like, no, this is not a good situation.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Where was Sara?
You know, I am fine that she wasn't at the reunion.
I have to say, I didn't think of it until we saw some flashback footage when they talked about Destiny sleeping with Sam and like talking to him for a little bit, potentially being involved with Sarah's brother. But I was a little bit like, oh wow, okay, I guess she's not coming.
Yeah. And you know, it was weird to me that Destiny basically said she and Sam are still talking and have seen each other. Like she said that, right? Because the last time we saw him.
I think they hadn't spoken in a while.
Ew. It was not good.
Right.
I don't know what was happening with him, but it was disgusting.
She might be just trying to secure someone when she goes to Vegas and she gets a little drunk and just might want to, you know, feel a man's body that she has, you know, she's...
That's the worst euphemism for sex I've ever heard. You know, feel a man's body.
Keeping him on deck, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't blame her. But, like, he's gross, so I do a little bit.
Yeah. MJ and Reza, what's the deal, you know?
I don't know, because I'm still pretty confused about everything that went down. And I think what we learned in this reunion was there might be more of this fourth wall, some kind of contract dispute. There seems to be something that they are not saying because maybe they can't say, but that might be the key to unlocking this whole situation because I really can't keep track of like who's at fault.
Let me ask you this, MJ. Were you trying to retaliate against Reza because of a contract dispute?
Yes.
Okay, that actually doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
You said in an interview on E!
Were cameras rolling during your birth?
No. Yes, you're right. They are filming, but I have not signed my deal yet. I'm more than happy to violate our Bravo contract.
No, it was the fourth. Destiny knows the reason.
My theory is that what they were trying to say is MJ had not yet signed her contract. Now, was MJ resentful that Reza wasn't sticking with her?
Right.
Was she somehow getting in touch with Ali as a way of securing drama that she could be involved in, or was she doing it in retaliation for one of the aforementioned things? I don't know, but these are the theories that are in my head.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's definitely some layers to it that we might not learn unless in part two, where they literally kick everyone else off the screen and have this mediation with Mike and Andy, maybe they'll get to the layers of what really happened, because I think they still care about each other. That is the one thing that I don't think has changed through this process, but they're not treating each other like people who care about each other. You know, it's like really kind of dark.
I know, but I feel like my mom has always said the opposite of love isn't hate, it's apathy. So it's like when you do hate someone, you're showing that there is love and real feelings behind that. Like there's,
yeah,
but it's when you no longer care that, wow, it's really dead in the water, you know?
I mean, I honestly too would just like to see them move on because I don't want to talk about Naked Jenga anymore. I still don't understand the rules of Naked Jenga number one.
Oh, well, okay, because they said it in this way, which I thought was very interesting. Well, Andy, as a gay man, do you ever send inappropriate gifts to other men?
Andy,
as a gay man, do you know other gay men who are only friends who send each other funny text messages with GIFs that are kind of dirty?
I do.
Thank you.
Right. Well, listen, I send GIFs all day long, but I don't know what GIFs he's sending to his friends or anybody.
I was like, well, you send me, I mean, we send each other GIFs all the time, but like, they're never naked.
Right. Like, and I don't even know if through Giphy or any of those GIF apps, if you can even search for like pornographic images, because they're all like, how would they regulate that? And it wouldn't be teenagers being able to send that stuff. Like, where is Adam getting these things?
Does Pornhub have like a GIF keyboard attachment? Because look, I'll download it. I'm not saying I'm above it. I just need to know about it.
Right. Yeah. I don't really know. I mean, I don't think that I've really tapped into pornographic GIFs as a joke or whatever, but it seems like this is something, like Mike says, that Adam's been doing for a really long time. And Mike's like, I'm not offended by it, but like maybe other people would be. But then for Andy to like co-sign it as like, oh, that's not uncommon. I think it's still maybe a little bit uncommon.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Thank you. Because I was like, what?
It just feels like it was too easy, and it was too quick of an excuse to use. Like, oh, everybody does that. It's fine. Like, Adam didn't do anything wrong. I'm still a little bit like, I sort of think maybe he did, but maybe, like I've said before, if there was some kind of understanding in Reza and Adam's relationship, and even when Destiny tells Reza and they do the flashback of her telling him, she says it, you can see it in his face. He doesn't seem super shocked by it. He doesn't seem to be like, oh my God, what?
Right.
Like, it's almost as if he knows exactly what she's talking about, but doesn't want to reveal that to her or Mike or whoever it may be. So I don't know. We got a lot of tears coming next week, though. That's for sure.
I am glad, weirdly, just because I feel like we didn't really get very far in this in part one.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I didn't feel like I got the resolution I was looking for.
Yeah. No, you're right. Next week we'll get it. And we'll have MJ on the show to actually talk a little bit more about it.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
What was your rose?
I can't really decide if it was a rose or a thorn, but I just felt like I needed to call it out, which is that I totally relate to Jess on Below Deck Med not being able to understand Bugsy, which I can understand Bugsy fine, but I do find I don't have an ear for accents. And a little bit like I'm Steve Martin in Father of the Bride, where it's just like everyone else can understand Frank, but like he can't. I find that that happens so much to me. And I think it might also influence why I can't speak another language. Like, languages are just not great for me, except English. Like, I've mastered it really well. But I felt for her in that moment. I mean, I think what Sandy said to her was good, though, which is like, look, you're going to come across people with all sorts of languages and accents in this, you know, boating career. So you need to figure it out.
Cheers, Bugs. Would you mind please grabbing me a tray of wine glasses?
You wanted what? Mixers?
Is it just me that can never understand her?
Wine glasses, just six of them for white wine? Did you copy that?
Kind of. I just can never understand you.
Wine glasses.
Oh, wine glasses. See what happens when you enunciate?
Yeah, definitely. I would say, too, watching like British TV shows definitely helps your ear get a little bit more trained to accents and dialects.
Yeah. What was your rose?
My rose, also from Below Deck Med, is Bugsy's shag, marry, kill selections when the charter guests were asking her about the deck hands, because I think she picked exactly who I would have picked.
Shag, marry, kill.
Okay, so I would shag Kiko, marry Alex, kill Peter.
Interesting.
I know. But I had not really thought about it so far this season, even though you and I do play that game quite often. But as soon as she revealed her results, I was like, oh yeah, I'm aligned with that. Okay, what was your thorn?
So my thorn is from Million Dollar Listing LA. I know that we don't talk about it often on the podcast, but it's been really good this season. But there is this developer who is such a dick. And he's got all this money, all these properties. He's really making Tracy work for it, but in a way that just doesn't feel great to me as a woman watching.
Well, Tracy has a really, really hot new boyfriend named Eric with a K.
Yes.
He's a personal trainer. So at the end of the day, Tracy wins and this guy loses. So take that, developer.
What's your thorn?
My thorn is, it was very brief, but it was one of the charter guests on Below Deck Med was lifting weights on the deck in the morning while everyone was sort of getting ready for breakfast or whatever they were doing. And I just was like, give it a rest, bro. Like, you're on vacation. Did you bring those weights yourself? Were they already on the boat? Like, I just had so many questions and I just wanted to be like, dude, just relax, you know? Stop being like that.
No rest day, only leg day.
Right. You know, it's like, come on, bro.
And as a reminder, we'll be back with an all new episode next week with MJ Javid from Shaws of Sunset.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me, kiss.